Yep. I just started the recording button. So sorry. I know you probably can't see it. I'll let you know. Okay. You're good to go anytime. Thanks.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and start the meeting. I apologize. I can't join you by video. For some reason, my team isn't letting me connect. This is a meeting of the Community Services and Safety Committee. If I could just have folks introduce themselves just so I know who's on the call since I can't see anybody. Anybody can start because I really can't see anybody.
Yes, I can start. My name is Zach Udon, council member.
Deshaun Quinn, council member.
Chris Kelly, Parks and Rec manager.
David Klein, city administrator.
Laurel Humphrey, city council staff.
Eric Drever, chief of police.
I heard the fire chief.
Zach Anderson, new police team sergeant.
Thank you.
And Norm Golden, deputy fire chief.
And Vicki Carlson, finance director.
Ben Heyman, fire marshal.
Okay. I feel like I'm going old school back to conference call days. It's really weird. Is there anybody else? All right. Thank you. So the first item on today's agenda is the 2020 Police Department Annual Report. Chief Drever, go ahead and take it away.
All right. I am going to share my screen here so those with video can see. All right, so can everybody see the presentation? Or at least somebody give me acknowledgement since I can't see people now when this is up?
Yeah.
Perfect. And please ignore the date. This was for the prior meeting, so we will move into the presentation. So 2020 was probably among one of the most difficult years for the police department and for law enforcement in general, as you combine a combination of the pandemic with the budgetary impacts associated with the pandemic, the restrictions and isolation. We actually had members of our department come down with COVID and quarantine. We also had a national perspective on law enforcement that drew scrutiny to our operations and how we go about conducting ourselves, as well as addressing hiring and other issues throughout the year. It was a perfect storm, for lack of a better definition. That being said, I'm beyond proud of the members of the department in the way that they triumphed over the adversity and provided service beyond anything that could have been expected for this community during such difficult times. So in 2020, we participated in the COVID-19 Emergency Command and Operation. We stood up the EOC in the Tukwila Community Center. We participated as branch managers for managing the operation center for initial activation of COVID response. We had an increase in our homeless outreach program, especially related to COVID and making sure that they were getting resources to our homeless communities within the city. Law Enforcement Training and Community Safety Act was first implemented in January, and Tukwila was on the front end of helping implement the Washington Administrative Code, where the LATACSA, the Law Enforcement Training Community Safety Act, was put into law. And so we worked with our independent investigation team, the Valley Independent Investigation Team, to create a standard that has been accepted across the state as the standard for independent investigations. So the Valley Independent Investigation Team put together a new policy related to the changes in legislation, and it is now used as the standard for the state. We began the process of accreditation, which is an acceptance of best practices and a way for holding ourselves accountable as department. Recruitment and retention was unfortunately impacted towards the end of the year. We saw several individuals retire. Hiring has become more difficult, especially as we've moved into 2021. We are still seeing residual effects of the combined environment as a whole and what it means for law enforcement and working in law enforcement today. So we are having difficulties with hiring. We also seen a focus for officer safety and wellness during these times. Aside from the operational challenges, it also challenged the wellness of the officers, their mental health, and their ability to cope with the added stress of the new work environment. We also saw questions coming into play regarding school engagement and whether or not we would have school resource officers in our schools moving forward. We are still working with the schools to shed light on what truly the students want and need. And then finally, towards the end of the year, as we hit the end of September into the fall, we moved into the Justice Center and now call it our home. So the Investigations Division has our narcotics team, and part of that team is Apollo and Officer Sturgill. And during the year, they seized more than $1 million in cash of suspected profits of illegal narcotics activity. The department, and through our contract with an agreement with the Federal Agency for the Post Office, which is where we do most of this, nets us 15% of those seizure funds. And so we are currently working with the federal government to have those funds brought to the department. We continued our efforts with human trafficking, and we regularly shared information with patrol and external stakeholders regarding the activities revolving around narcotics, as well as the human trafficking. The Major Crimes Unit had 316 cases assigned for the year, and the Valley Investigations Team, and Major Crimes participated in the Valley Investigations Team. One of the things of note as it relates to our investigations and patrol for the year was our de-escalation practices. We have been training over the last couple of years, and it is shown in our use of force. It's been our use of force from 2019 to 2020 dropped almost 19%. We also put into play an opportunity to create some transparency and accountability by establishing a use of force review board, which then was used for the first time here this quarter, first quarter of 2021. However, we established it in the end of 2020 as a derivative from our independent investigation teams, taking the ideas and the transparency that we gained from those investigations on a regional level, bringing them here to the department for all use of force instead of just use of force that is associated with that cause of death. We received over 30,000 plus calls for service. A total of 6,785 cases were taken by our officers on the year, with 1,257 cases completed via online reporting. And we continued our focus on the Tukula International Boulevard, Central Business District, and then other hotspots as they cropped up. And then towards the end of the year, gaining momentum with our community engagement and including more community programs and outreach efforts. Our support operations division processed 3,588 records requests, 1,638 hours approximately spent on those records requests, and 3,321 evidence and property were processed. Now, this was also in addition, as it relates to our evidence, to the fact that we were moving from the Justice Center, or from our old station to the Justice Center, which required a 100% audit of every parcel and piece of evidence that we had in possession. So every piece of evidence was audited and moved to the Justice Center in order for us to, and tracked in order for us to confirm that we have a valid valid evidence tracking of every piece of evidence in our holding. We completed 90% of all evidence inventory and successfully moved to the Justice Center, which was part of that. Digitized cases from 2005 through 2006 and loaded them on Laserfish. We're still behind on digitizing our analog files. We just have not had the staffing to focus on that. However, we have applied for a grant that will help pay for the cost of contracting some of that. So hopefully as we move into the new year here, we'll be able to capitalize on that. And then ultimately 7,889 police reports were processed by our support operations division. Our professional standards division, which is responsible for our training, our policy and accreditation, did 24-hour training requirements for all sworn personnel. So bare minimum, every sworn personnel had at least 24 hours of training throughout the year, which was focused primarily on police patrol tactics and de-escalation and crisis intervention training. The development implementation of LaTaxa requiring, which was required mandated training, which stemmed from I-940, and working on accreditation and proofs so that we can be accredited this year. We began the process this in 2020, and we are set to be accredited at the fall conference for WASPIC here in November. Our Special Operations Division continues to work on the homeless front, bringing a unique way of, or not unique, but a compassionate way of addressing homelessness in our city. We don't just go and kick people out. We look and find the specific resources that can help those individuals. We work with them. We work with the regional mental health practitioners as well as navigators to help get them the help that they need. We continued the work with our International Rescue Committee, or with the International Rescue Committee. And then we also held the second year of Bully Proof Student Program, which was put on by School Resource Officer Joseph Tran. Our co-responder program proposal was drafted due to just the logistics behind trying to put together a pilot program. We weren't able to bring it into play before the end of the year. However, we are now in the process of finalizing that, and hopefully here by the time we hit July, we'll actually have them on board and have our co-responder program up and running. The pedestrian and bicyclist safety grant was applied for and received for us to be able to put on safety training for the public. And then our traffic unit conducted 488 traffic infractions, 126 criminal traffic cases, and assisted with traffic safety during several of the protests. Our regional partnerships, special weapons and tactics, our civil disturbance unit, Puget Sound Auto Theft Task Force, the Valley Narcotics Enforcement Team, the Valley Independent Investigation Team, and the Valley Hostage Negotiation Teams are all teams that we partner with for the region. So we partner with other Valley agencies and the Port of Seattle so that we can combine our efforts and our resources. During the year, the Employee of the Year for 2020 was Rebecca Hickson. The Employee of the Quarters, we choose two for each quarter. were Chris Dunn and Kenneth Etheridge, Anna Beard, Larry Han, Christina Titiali, Henry Linehan, Patrick Hisa, and John Thomas, all of which represent just about every unit within our department. We had life-saving medals for Officer Arjona, Officer Greenhill, Officer Harris, and Commander Rossi, Officer Thomas, Officer Tiemann, and Officer Zwicky. I believe there was a total of 4 specific incidents where the combined efforts of these officers saved the lives of not only our community members, however, but also a community member down south. I'm trying to remember where it was, down by Bonnie Lake. I cannot remember exactly where it took place, but it was Commander Rossi on his day off. Jumped into action and saved a child from a burning vehicle. The Meritorious Service Medal was provided to Officer Kenneth Etheridge, and we also had 3 promotions. Sergeant Rock was promoted to Commander. Officers Harris and Cullens were promoted to Sergeant during the year. For our statistics, you can look at the graph, and I apologize, Cynthia, you're not able to see it. However, it shows a growth in population from 2018 through 2020. 2018 showed 20,144 population, and we've grown by about 1,000 to 21,229 over the last 2 years. And during the last 2 years, during 2020, our calls for service went down significantly from 31,266 in 18 to 30,189 in 2019, and then another significant drop to 28,646 in 2020. And we believe that drop in 2020 is directly associated with COVID. We were par for course, unfortunately, with our stat for murder. We had 3 homicides in 2020. And a unique outlier here, the number of rapes, or at least reported rapes, went up by 7. Last year, or in 2019, there were 24. They've gone up to 31. We do have outlying years. If we were to compare over the years, you're always going to see an outlier, but usually you'll see them somewhere around 20. Robberies went down slightly to 64 in 2018, 69, 2019, 70. Aggravated assault went down from last year, from 2019 to 2020, 61 down to 50. Total crimes against person down to 148. We saw a significant increase in crimes against property as it relates to arson and also burglaries. We have no explanation for this aside from, and this is something that fire might be able to comment on, we believe that there may have been individuals that were prone to setting fires, living in Tukwila, or at least coming to Tukwila and setting some fires. And it caused that particular stat to go up. Burglary went up from 2019 from 184 to 223. However, it's lower than it was in 2018. And so roughly on track for about what we can expect. A lot of that also depends on whether or not people report the burglary, depending upon what was stolen and how traumatized they were. Sometimes people choose not to report that crime, especially if it's items that were stolen off a porch or that they just recognize it as gone. However, we do encourage people still to file the reports because if it's anything that has unique identifiers, we can put it into systems that can potentially track it if the item should show up later somewhere else. And ultimately, auto thefts were up significantly over last year, 487 compared to 488. However, In 2018, it was up to 579. So only slight variance over the 3 years. And then total crimes against property significantly down by about 400 or so at 3,078 versus 3,417 over the year prior. So in 2020, had a budget of 17,682, keeping in mind that that was a budget reduction due to COVID, and we were asked to give approximately 10% back, and I think we came in at roughly 9.5%, just hitting the mark. We had 78 commissioned officers, 21 non-commissioned, with 28,646 calls for service, 838 total traffic citations, reported vehicle accidents with a combined total for injury, fatality, non-injury, and injury hit and run. A total of 452 accidents that were investigated. And here's a more detailed look at our budget with our expenses. For primary aspect of our budget is patrol or police operations, which is our labor. We have our jail costs sitting at about $1 million. It went down because of lack of usage. Dispatch costs remained roughly the same and went up via contracted services. Oops. Sorry about that. I just skipped, hit the wrong button. So total budget post-amendment ended up being $19,390,720. With our police operations coming in at 16,946 and I guess that's all for that one. We're all familiar with the budget. So that's all I had for 2020. It was an exceptionally challenging year for us. Things are not getting necessarily easier at this time. However, I think we are adjusting so that we can be as efficient as possible.
Thank you. Council members, do you have any questions? We'll start with Deshaun.
First, I'd say, Chief Jewett, thank you for the report. There's so many things to ask about here, but a couple of things that popped out to me, and one is, you know, under the investigation division, kind of highlighted the human trafficking emphasis, and periodically we will hear about efforts going on across the county, and what I usually find is that, and the state, is that we're involved in a lot of them, and so. Just wondering if there are ways to kind of continue to highlight the things that you're involved in. I mean, I think we've been involved in the human trafficking emphasis for some time. So that's kind of, I guess it's a comment, and unless you wanted to make a comment on that.
Yeah, so the organized regional efforts for the human trafficking emphasis, we participate in quarterly. We do provide the information that comes out of that. I believe in 2020, we only participated twice, and a lot of that was trying to organize such things around the pandemic. Our goal is to participate in the regional efforts on a quarterly basis, and we will make sure we do a better effort of making sure that information not only gets out to the council, but to the public. But the other thing is highlighting the cases that are actually Tukwila-based in between those emphasis and the efforts that we're doing to make sure we get resources to those that are being trafficked.
And thank you. And then kind of to also add to that point, is your involvement in some ways for operations to reduce violence? So this is kind of a partnership, whether it be with security teams, related to gang violence. I at least know of two instances where Tukwila police have been coordinating and present for unfortunately, funerals that involve a level of violence and maybe related to either gang activity or a reaction to. So, and I noticed those things aren't on your reports, but I kind of think it might be good to highlight that as well, because you've established relationships with security teams whose initial is, you know, kind of to promote nonviolence, and they put themselves out when events like that occur, and there's some coordination there.
I agree wholeheartedly. We missed that one. That's on me. We have been involved throughout the year with the gun violence, working with not only some of the regional partners, but with King County and the specific work that they've been doing to track with the daily violence report. We've been participating in that, and we should have highlighted it. So I think that's an exceptional note that we'll make sure we include for next time, because that's some really good work that they've been doing.
And then I'll probably cover the things that, well, I won't go into detail, but we talked about data and data collection, the interface, you know, kind of getting a sense of, when we talk about kind of compassionate interactions, you know, what type, right? And how do we track it so that then as a policymaker, we know how to, you know, to support what organizations or institutions that help address maybe the needs out there. Under the statistics, you know, kind of you listed them as outliers, but the scary thing is they could be indicators, right? And I'm a little... there's some ones that are kind of disturbing, and I kind of wanted to know if you could speak to this. Obviously, the rape number is very just devastating. And then obviously the arson number, but then the aggravated assaults were down, and I think some of those could definitely be due to the pandemic. But do you track these just, you know, to make sure that they aren't indicators versus an outlier?
We do. So Trina Cook is our crime analyst, and she reviews the stats as they relate to how they track over the years. And I refer to them as outliers because of the anomaly. And if she's very good at tracking those items, and if she felt that this was a new trend, or my position is she would have told me. Now, that is assumptive. I don't know the answer, but I'm acting based off of how we've interacted and addressed these things in the past. The arson, I mean, yeah, that's huge. And that's indicative usually of something, someone actually active in the area that's lighting fires. And we had somebody that over in 2020 was lighting tires on fire and leaving them burning. We had the one under the bridge. There were several instances. And so until we're able to track the individuals down that are actually doing it, you may see the trend continue in that. But we're awfully vigilant, and we've also been working with the fire department. As it relates to the rapes, I don't have an answer for you. It is disturbing to me to see that number. However, it's one of those crimes where they're a crime of opportunity sometimes. It also depends on what sexual predators happen to be in the area. And because of the demographics of our city and the size of our city, and we bring in transient population, there's no necessarily indication that the individuals that are doing this even live in Tukwila. And so trying to track these, a reason behind an increase, is exceptionally hard. Furthermore, it's also the type of crime that is exceptionally hard to try and put preventative measures in place, because you know, unless we do educational programs, that's the type of thing where you would need to hit schools early, but at an appropriate age level, talking about the potential for date rape and doing it as part of health classes. It becomes next to impossible to put preventative measures in place on the suspect side. You know, we can do things from a crime prevention measure to make houses less attractive to an individual that's thinking about conducting a burglary. So how do you go about that for each individual specific person who may be the potential victim of a rape? It's next to impossible, aside from the educational piece, which is something that maybe we should look at with the schools and could be something we can talk with Dr. Herndon about.
Okay. And then my last point, so just two quick things. I know that some of the kind of community spaces, town halls have been a platform where you've built some relationships with folks that have participated. And so I know that at least there was a commitment to pursue maybe some of the contributors' comments about their experience of being female and needing the police and then having the care associated and potentially ideas on how to help prevent some instances. And so I'm not going to really ask you about that's because I'm, you know, that's the space I operate in. And I think it's noted what Tukwila does, and it is not overwhelmingly shared by other jurisdictions. Let me just say that. My last kind of question or consideration is under the statistics as it relates to the kind of non-injury hit and runs. And, you know, I think I'm particularly interested in that information and statistics as we talk about really kind of speed limits and coming out of COVID, knowing honestly where COVID drivers have been before, just, you know, just increased speed. So that would be something that I would be interested in. And then the last thing is just the numbers with these hit and runs, just for edification, that's responding to I-405, I-5, but these stats are representative of all those things, right?
With the exception of the interstate, so I-5 and I-405 are not inclusive unless State Patrol was not able to respond. Because it's in Tukwila, we have right of first refusal. However, most accidents that occur on 405 and or I-5 are handled by Washington State Patrol, and we will call to actually have them dispatch for that.
Okay. I'd be interested in a breakout for those that are Tukwila's first on the scene so we can kind of know more. I just made the assumption that they were either included, and then the nuance of if they're not and how and why would be good to know.
Okay.
Thank you. Councilmember Edon.
Thank you. Councilmember Quinn has asked a lot of good questions, some that I wanted to ask. I don't really have any particular. The ones that I wanted to lean on were responded. Just a general question as to this type of report. Is it kind of similar to what we've been producing for the past couple of years, or there's just some changes this year?
This is similar to what we've produced in the past, and given some of the other things that were occupying my time here over the last 6 months, I did not change anything. However, Fee actually helps me put this together. She does the bulk of the work where I will get information and make edits. We were discussing reaching out to not just the council, but as part of our community engagement, what information do you want us reporting on? And so we didn't have time to try and do that this year. However, we're looking at the formatting. So if you have suggestions, similar to what Councilmember Quinn was providing, let us know, and we'd be happy to, we can put whatever the community wants in here.
Yeah, so I know the town hall you did some of the feedback that you heard I think would be good. Some of the things that and some I think Councilmember Quinn has mentioned but, you know, doing that check-in with the community and putting some of the things that they really want to see, I believe would be really beneficial. But for me, I think that the level of information that's on here, it's really great information. So I just wanted to thank you and your staff putting together the statistics plus the budget and all that good stuff. So I just want to say thank you, the effort your staff and you put together. I yield back.
Thank you.
So I have more of just like a big picture question. I'm looking at the statistics for the crime in Tukwila. The calls for service were about, say, 28,000. Total crimes against persons, 148. Total crimes against property, 3,000. So in terms of like how many calls for service you get versus how many crimes are actually reported, there's a huge gap in there. So my question is really, what is it that we're not seeing when police officers are responding to these calls? Like, there's so much that is not crime that you're responding to. Can you speak to those instances?
I can not only speak to those instances, but I can also put it into perspective as it relates to the new legislative reform measures we're seeing come out of the most recent session. So, law enforcement has become the ad hoc response to just about anything that doesn't fall into a specific niche. If it's anything medical, usually fires called, but sometimes police are still called just because sometimes we can get there faster, or the very nature of whatever the injury is. Neighbor disputes, civil disputes between neighbors. My fence is on his land, or he's trying to mow my side of the fence. I mean, they're civil disputes, but we get called there because we can help create an environment of peace, so prevent it from escalating by using some of our verbal judo and our de-escalation. However, a lot of those calls are 911 hangups at a payphone, if we even have those anymore, but everybody's got their own cell phone now. But, you know, a 911 hangup at the 7-Eleven, and we go there and find that there's nobody there, you know, and we ask around and nobody's finding anything. So it encompasses a wide gambit of things that we should be responding to, suspicious activity, and then getting there and finding out, okay, well, it's actually, we're not needed, or there's no one here to give us further information. We aren't able to follow up on it. So that's why you see a large number of calls for service, but only X number of cases, a small fraction of that, where we actually take cases. Sometimes it's a call for civil standby. Sometimes it's a person in crisis. So it's not a crime to be suicidal. And so we respond to that, doesn't get logged as a crime. We will take a case report on it so that we can document our interactions. But now with the new reform measure, it's been made clear that the community thinks that the police, not just Tukwila, but for Washington State, believes that law enforcement are forced to engage in way too many things that are outside the parameters, really, of what our training and specialty is. We become a catch-all for everything. So moving forward, we as a community need to identify what is it that's important for our community and what is it that we want our police engaging in. That's a part of some of the reform 1510, was it? House Bill 1510, I think. 1310, I think it was, on use of force and how it is moved towards probable cause as the factor for whether or not we can even use force to take somebody into custody and or detain them. Before, we had Terry versus Ohio, which allowed us to stop and detain somebody under reasonable suspicion of committing a crime. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to do that. So we have to now, with the new reform that's coming into place, and it's going to be effective July 25th, we're going to have to evaluate the calls that we go to and whether or not we will continue going to them. And that needs to be in concert with the community and what their needs are. So I don't know what the answer is. We still will respond if community members want us to respond. However, we need to be cognizant of where our capabilities are and where our resources are and what activities the community wants us actually engaging in. So we're going to be relying more heavily on our mental health practitioners to help us out with calls of individuals in crisis. We're going to be relying on some of our partnering regional resources as it relates to getting mediators involved for civil disputes instead of us responding. So it's a work in progress. A lot of it is going to come out of the COPCAB survey that we're just about ready to put out there so that we can actually understand what it is that the community wants and how they want us conducting law enforcement in the Tukwila community.
Is there data that's captured that shows sort of that all of these things that aren't crimes that you all have to respond to? Like after every encounter, say there's a civil dispute between two neighbors, like is there a way that you capture that data so that we have a better understanding of like what those different types of calls are and whether there's a particular type that we should be paying attention to that so that we can address these instances where, you know, law enforcement shouldn't be the ones having to respond?
So the simple answer is yes, but it's very raw data. It's essentially what was dispatched, and using the CAD data, being able to find out, okay, what were officers dispatched to, and then ultimately what the disposition was, which is usually a letter code. And it can be as simple as cleared, what they call TTOM. A T code indicates that we came there, we assisted in whatever capacity, whatever the incident, if it was we helped save a cat, it wasn't criminal, didn't require a case being taken, we'll clear it as a TTOM. And so that encompasses just about everything that falls under that list you were talking about. And so aside from getting a list of what the dispatch call was, there isn't much data. However, moving forward with the new reform, one of the things we are looking into as a region is a way to capture the data, because I personally believe that there may be a detriment to some of the services to the community with some of the reform. There was a lot of good reform, but the specific measure that requires PC in order for us to be able to so much as touch a person is going to allow for suspects to be roaming around in our communities, because we are not going to have the ability to detain them moving forward. And so we want to try and track some of these calls that do not end up being in cases, so that we can identify where we might be able to focus efforts on a compromised or balanced approach on new reform measures to address the lacking of some of the new reform.
Thank you. I appreciate your report and just being here and answering all of our questions. We really appreciate all that you all do.
Thank you.
Council members, do any of you have any other questions? I could see you guys, but you can't see me. I've gone halfway to fixing my tech issues. Okay, let's go on to item B, which is a grant application for the COPS hiring program.
Since I went way over on my time for the first one, I think I can simplify this one. So this committee has asked that we bring grants before it, before we get committed. And this one is asking for a 25% matching fund. In the COPS grant hiring grant program this time. This particular grant, it has a goal of providing funding directly to law enforcement agencies to hire and or rehire additional career law enforcement officers to increase their community policing capacity and crime prevention efforts. This is in direct response to some of the impact that COVID had. So we are looking at the potential of freeing up one of our frozen positions utilizing this grant. So if we had revenue coming into the city that would unfreeze those positions, we would get this position back anyways, except for this is now going to cover 75% of that cost for a position that we might have gotten back anyways. However, there is a 25% match, and the position that we're tying to this grant would be the liaison officer position, so that again, we can focus on our diverse community and their needs, and the homeless encampments, our immigrants and refugee populations, by bringing back that second position for our liaison officer. There was also a second grant we wanted to inform you about with this info memo that was a officer wellness grant. Is 100%, if we should receive the grant, it's 100% funded. There's no city match, and it'll help us bolster our officer wellness program and our peer support.
Thank you. Deshaun, do you have any questions?
No questions. Maybe just for more clarity. This grant will free up a more focused approach for kind of targeted building relationships, kind of what we talked about during the budget, and kind of spread it across multiple officers. So this would kind of have be a focused person, correct?
Correct.
And then the second thing, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I do want to clarify that this, in order to fill the position with a current officer, we would need to hire and backfill, and that takes time. So I would not expect us to be able to immediately fill this position. It will probably take us close to a year before we're able to capitalize on this, but it is a five-year program, of which they cover 3 years of it. So we will have a little flexibility in there.
Okay. So I would just say I'm supportive, for the reasons, and then also knowing that then the police department has an opportunity to kind of continue to make the case around the need and the value of this position, right? Because it's not just there's a 25%, but if you look at the overtime, you know, clearly you can see you need some folks. And this officer wellness, I would just say that from my interactions with Chief Villa back in the days, just talking about de-escalation, like this contributes to that officer wellness program. So I'm supportive of both, and actually having a COPS grant that's designed like this and for the items that were listed. So I'm glad to see that the federal government's actually funding things that look at creative community-centered approaches.
Councilmember Edan.
I don't have any questions for the chief as to both of the grants, but I do have a general question for Mr. Klein or Vicky if they're on the line.
I'm here, Councilmember. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. So one of the grants that requires matching has that, you know, this will come through as an amendment in the budget sometime in the future. I've seen few of those recently, and I'm just kind of curious as to do we have a depository or a list of all the potential that have went through different committees? And then, you know, for me, there's a a method that I like to kind of receive this information. So just kind of curious if there is a methodology as to how do we move in the budget amendments in the committee.
So I'll let Finance Director Vicki Carlson respond to. I think that you've been very clear, and I think that's a great idea to keep a list of all of the amendments, especially this year, because there's going to be several phases in the finance committee that you're chair of. So I'll let Ms. Carlson respond about how we keep track of all this information. And I think I also saw Chief Drever with his hand up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, so Vicki Carlson, Finance Director. So two things. First of all, we are keeping a list, and this request was made, so we're compiling this together so we can bring this back to, I think it was made in the Finance Committee, and it was also made at the council meeting last Monday to just get a list of all the budget amendments that have been discussed. So we're working to compile that list so we can bring that forward. And it's also my understanding regarding the grant that has a match. The grant would be applied for now. It would take a while for it to be awarded. When I spoke with Jake Berry, the public safety financial budget analyst, he indicated that if the grant was awarded, we probably wouldn't be addressing any budgetary issues with this grant until 2023. So it would be included in the next biennial budget cycle. So there would not be a budget amendment this year, or most likely even in 2022. We would address it through the budget process for the 2023-2024 biennial budget.
Thank you. I think I appreciate that. So one of the things I'm curious about is, when an item that has a budgeted language and it kind of goes through it, I think if all the items that have some sort of a significant budget amendment attached to it should all come at one time. And I'm kind of curious if just the list is great, but just even having all that at one place and discussing that would be a more efficient, I think, for us if we're on the council to look through all of them and to figure out which ones are priority that we've talked about during the budget and which ones can we, instead of just kind of piecemealing through, and then some of them have been already made a decision and then some will be made decision during when we discuss. So I think having all of them at one space, it's a way that I would want to receive an information. Is that something you'd be able to do that, or is that something that you would want a body of us to say, or a majority of us to say, we need it that way?
So there's actually two answers to your question, your comments. First of all, what we can do is we can start adding, because this would actually help the finance department out too, a section in the budget. We do a monthly budget update in the Finance and Governance Committee. We can just add a section to that report that just kind of keeps track of all the budget amendments that have been brought forward to council that council has agreed to via consensus. We can't, unfortunately, come at one time with all of the potential budget amendments because things happen throughout the year that we're not aware of necessarily at the beginning of the year. Like, for example, this grant is a great example. We might not have known about this in January. As soon as we hear about it, we bring it forward to the committee process to make council aware of it. So we can definitely create a list to keep track of it and memorialize that in some of our reporting capabilities, but to figure out all of these potential requests at one time, I think would be very difficult because, again, things happen throughout the year that we're not aware of until it rises to the surface.
I agree with you. I think, an example of seeing this one as an outlier is hard to predict. The things that can be predicted would be.
We're not speaking.
Cool. I think he's muted now. So just the ones that I can predict it would be really beneficial. If that's something hard to do, then it can't be done. If it could be done, I think it would be great to have that. I yield back. I don't have another question later to this. Appreciate it.
I had one question. If I'm remembering correctly, I'm trying to understand, or My understanding of why we had to take a police officer out of the community-oriented specialty group is because you needed to fully staff the patrol division. Is that correct? And now this is an opportunity to bring that position back?
Yes and no. The position was vacated due to attrition, bodies moving naturally through promotion. I don't remember specifically because that was, we were running about a year. It was end of 2019. And Zach, feel free to step in here and help me out with this one. But through attrition, that position was vacated. And then as we were moving into the budget, we just didn't have the staffing to allocate to that position and several others in the department. So the positions that ended up getting frozen became the positions that we could not fill because of staffing issues. And so we didn't take anybody out. It was through a trip to reduce our numbers. It was it naturally occurred, and then we just haven't been able to restaff it.
I think what Councilwoman Johnson was referring to also was maybe Chris Partman's position, which was our community policing coordinator, which was a civilian position. It was under Chief Linton that we took that position and turned it into two evidence positions, I believe.
Yes.
I just think the work that is done in Sergeant Anderson's team is really important, and I'm supportive of this request if it means providing more people to his team.
So just for clarification, that team is becoming a priority for us, with especially with the new reforms. We would be staffing these teams regardless as we get our staffing back. This grant just will help pay for it, where before it would not have, but we would have still staffed it.
Okay, sounds good. How are my other council members feeling? Are we moving this forward? Where is this going? Sorry, I need to go back to this.
It's a committee decision, okay.
So, council members, how are you feeling? Yes? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, you have our approval. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. The next item on the agenda is agenda item number C, a contract with Security Lines US for park security cameras.
Chris Kelly, Parks and Recreation Manager, and this is actually something we brought last month to this committee. And so just to do a little bit of history some more clarification, I asked some PD staff to join me. So just history-wise, this goes back to the CIP program that was approved in 2018 for the 2019 to 24. Part of our park improvements was the security cameras. We started at Cascade View, and that park got cameras in 2019. PD can help with some of the benefits from that being installed there. And so the other locations were other areas of concerns or areas that get a lot of the vandalism, graffiti, car break-ins, things like that. So the locations like TCC is a replacing an existing system that's been there as long as the building's been there. And then the other locations were more of the parks that don't necessarily have residents around them. So Tuck Pond, which is almost like a business location. Codiga, which is off, no residents other than across the street. And then Crystal Springs, which also has a few, in the back, but it was more geared towards the parking lots, tennis courts, restrooms. So the concerns that were brought up from this committee of the surveillance were warranted, and it was kind of a miscommunication on my behalf. It's a security type that goes with our STEP-TED, our pruning, our sight lines, our visibility, our lighting, everything that we can do, our presence in the parks during the day. So a lot of this is going to be helping PD and helping our community stay safe so that we can get there in the morning, clean up any mess we have, and then create that safe space for our public and our residents to use. So that's the intention of it. I know PD and Zach Anderson can help with any other questions you guys might have, or maybe even some info he wants to share.
Dr. Anderson, do you have anything you
want
to add?
Yeah, I'll just give my own personal pitch on the camera system. The greatest thing about the cameras, it's just a force multiplier. It allows us to instantly transport, check in an area that where we might be on the other side of town. I mean, it's app-based, so on our work phones, if you can see with the blur, we're able to jump in and see what might be going on. If we have a specific problem area, we could set up actually an invisible fence through IT. So if somebody enters that area, we can be notified. Everybody here sounds like they're obviously for combating human trafficking. Well, we've had specific instances at Crystal Springs Park where we've been able to take down people with that were actively trafficking you know, foreign nationals through Tukwila, because that park is so easily accessed through 405 and I-5. You know, just to give you just a quick statistic as we move on, obviously cat causality is something, can be a number of different factors. But once we got those cameras installed, our calls for service were cut in half. So that says something right there. Obviously, that's not just due to the cameras, but it is a contributing factor. And during that time, our officer initiated stops, which where we just proactively call out, doubled. So while calls were going down, our officer contacts were going up. So I think that says something about the success of the cameras so far, and that's just for one part.
Thank you. Council Member Quinn, do you have any questions?
No, I asked my questions, I think, the last time. And then, I don't know, I mean, there's definitely a sense of, I would just say, homeowners use cameras all the time to kind of protect their property. And the force multiplier is something that resonates, knowing where our resources are.
Thank you. I see, Ben, your hand's up. Did you want to speak to this?
Yeah, thank you. I know no one asked for this, but I would also like to speak professionally in favor of this as well, because of the many suspicious fires that we've had in the area. Tukwila Pond, we've had quite a few. The city had a gazebo that got burned up, and that was tens of thousands of dollars. So having those cameras really helps. It helps PD, it helps the parks, and it helps fire investigators trying to determine, you know, how it happened, because a lot of those times there's no power supply, there's no sources for this, so they're generally all suspicious fires, and we don't want it to escalate and get worse. So I just want to speak in favor of that as well.
Thank you. I appreciate your comment. Council Member Edan.
Yeah, thank you. I read the memo. You know, I don't have any particular very direct question to any of the presenters. But I question as to is this really the highest priority in terms of the list of projects that are on CIP? And I think that there are other projects that a lot more higher than putting cameras on these spaces. So therefore, I think we should really kind of look into some of the things that we've heard from the community during the budget as to what they really want to focus on as some of those projects. With that said, I personally think that this is not the time to move forward with these cameras on the spaces, especially on the parks. I yield back.
I'll say I'm feeling similarly to Zach, although it is really helpful to hear from Sergeant Anderson as well as Captain Heyman about the importance of being able to respond and having these as a tool to help
promote safety or prevent crime or fires in our city. You know, I recently heard a presentation from students at the University of Washington really looking at some problematic issues involved with surveillance cameras and just the disproportionate effect or impact that it can have on communities of color. And, you know, I just read an article about facial recognition technology, which is not what this is, right? This is not facial recognition technology.
I think the city's already come out with its own decree that will not ever be a factor in Tukwila. So.
Okay, well, that's good to clarify and say this is not that. But I don't know. I see Tracy's also on the call, and I don't know if she wants to speak to just in terms of priorities for the parks, because I'm sort of leaning with Zach too, is that there is this, you know, one of the highest priorities for the parks. And if we said no, could Parks and Rec use this money elsewhere? I guess is what my question would be.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for bringing this up and inviting me to the conversation as well. I really do think this is a high priority because we are seeing more and more incidents happening in some of our parks of vandalism and destruction. And when we don't know what's happening and we have to come upon it, or when I think this is just a tool that helps us track those incidents and respond in a quicker, better way. And with a small maintenance staff and a small workforce, I think this is just one of the tools that is important for us to use. And we want to support our police and fire partners if this is a helpful tool for them.
Thank you. I see that this is the next step for this is Committee of the Whole. We could forward it to them. At this point, because Zach and I guess aren't like in agreement that this is, I see the importance, I get it, but I'd feel more comfortable forwarding this without a recommendation. Is that okay with you, Deshaun?
I think the chair can kind of could do
whatever
what you want to do. And I think it's also how it's presented. I would just say that I remember very vividly in Allentown, one particular park that had significant challenges over and over and over again, and community members being pretty clear that they wanted some type of surveillance because at night it's so close to their homes, and there had been some shootings in the area, actually consistently in the area in the evening. That's what I think about when I hear this presentation. And the challenge had been that it occurs, and because everyone's left, the limited evidence and relief for residents was significantly deteriorated because of that. And it's been a problem for many, many years. And then I also think about one other park, which is the Riverton Park, where actually a homeowner who lived across the street put himself in harm's way. And there were some challenges that the neighborhoods were pretty clear about. And then we hear about it quite a bit on Night Out Against Crime. So I just think there are some things where staffing, just because of how we're structured, is a challenge to these considerations.
And what I'll do is I think it would be great if Sergeant Anderson could be there at the meeting. hoping the committee of the whole could speak to this so that it can, we can have this similar conversation that night when presenting this issue. Zach, I don't know if you want to.
Yeah, sure. No, it's not a problem at all. It is a sensitive subject, and we need to be communicative about how we're going to do that respectfully, and respect everybody's privacy. This isn't something where we're pointing them at people's homes or in over their fences. We are only actively monitoring areas, and it's not actively monitored. Yes, it might be recording, but that's another conversation. Only areas that you would observe with your public eye. So that's what we're talking about. If you happen to be standing there, that's the coverage that we're referring to.
Thanks. Zach, did you want to say anything?
So I think it's a good idea to move this up to the committee of the whole, so other council members can weigh in. I think it would be good to for me to get a sense of what is high priority for parks. If this is a high priority, I like to get some insight on what that looks like. So that, because this is in the CIP, so I kind of want to see what's on the CIP that is really high priority. So I yield back.
Thanks. And maybe Laurel can follow up with Tracy about having you come back on a different date to sort of share with us what Councilmember Dunn is requesting.
Happy to.
Thank you. All right, the next item on the agenda, and I'm conscious of time, want to get us out here with enough time to at least take a little break before the next meeting. A resolution designating weapon storage for court visitors, and I have Laurel speaking to that item.
Yes, thank you, Councilmember. I can be very brief. So state law prohibits people from visitors to the court from bringing firearms or other weapons into any court area. And there is an obscurity in state law that says the legislative body will adopt a resolution establishing where they can store their weapons for safekeeping. And so because the municipal court is now in the Justice Center, this resolution will replace the previous one. And if you look at page 51, it simply states that people visiting the court can temporarily store their weapons in the gun storage room located at the Justice Center. And I'm asking for you to approve this or recommend to approve it to the council and forward it to the June 28th COW. Thanks. Questions?
No? Okay. I'm good with it too.
Great. Thank you so much.
That was really fast. All right. Let's bring Tracy back and let's hear about Fire Station 52 Community Engagement Plan, because I think that's coming up. This is discussion only.
Yes. We know you've been discussing the disposition of Fire Station 52 site. And so with our staff and community engagement staff, Rachel Bianchi, Naisha Burke-Brooks, and Stephanie Gardner, we developed just the simple plan to do a community engagement event at that site this summer. We thought we would do it on August 11th, which is a regular meeting of the Parks Commission. This is a good way for us to engage with the community and answer questions about, the facility itself. Rachel and her team would open up the building and allow tours and answer any questions about the facility and why recommending it not be used for public use in the future, and also do some fun visioning with the community about what could happen on this park site. So we would have some boards with some potential ideas for what could happen at this site. We have talked about doing some specific kids activities where they could help us imagine what a park in this neighborhood would look like. We'd have some entertainment and some food. And we've also been in contact with the Tocqueville Historical Society, and they have put the state on their calendar. They'd be happy to open up to the community for tours of their site as well. So, and as noted here, we would cover all event-related costs using Parks Commission funding. So that's all I have for you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I think this is really exciting. I really, really enjoyed the See You in the Park event that you all put on. So I was excited to see this, and I live in this neighborhood. So my question is really, I want this, and maybe this is a question for Laurel, is I want Tracy to just present this to the other council members, not necessarily like asking for okays or questions, but I just want them to have this information sooner rather than later so they could all put it on their calendars. So Laurel, do you have thoughts about the best way to do that?
I don't off the top of my head, council member, but I will connect with Tracy in the morning to get something scheduled.
Okay.
Thanks.
And then Deshaun or Zach, do you have any questions for Tracy?
I would just say, Cynthia, I'm usually pretty reluctant to draw attention to myself, but I have to say, like, seeing the park actually came from a suggestion that I gave that parks then implemented, and I think this goes along with it, is, like, they are a real partner in figuring out what could work, and they're willing to step into spaces to be creative. To come up with a solution that works for a community. And I think that engagement leads to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. So that's why I'm excited about it.
Nice. Yay. I'm excited. You guys are coming to my neighborhood. Okay. So I think that's it for the agenda. We got done. Thank you so much, everybody, this evening. I'm going to adjourn the meeting so that folks can have time to get ready for our next one.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.